This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm joined in the studio by
Frida Liu,
Arvind Yuvraj.
We will be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. Nice long weekend. Sadly, we're back here in the studio. For those of you who are traveling, wherever you are, you know, we're going to try and keep you company for the next hour or so. Let's have a little bit of fun. If you want to get in touch with our show this afternoon, get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. So, what are we doing today? Oh, yes. What if we killed the job interview, right? I think this is a great story. We're going to be starting off with that very shortly, and that's something we're going to be opening up WhatsApp and Twitter too. We'd like your feedback on this. Then, how to stay excited at work when you have 1,000 interests.
It's so me, isn't it?
And we've learned a new word, haven't we?
Yes.
Story number three. Oprah, she's coming up big with Apple. They've signed up her in a $1 billion programming push. This is something we should be debating.
Because she needs the money.
Because she needs the money, of course. And then how a smart company in the UK, a paper straw factory, they've decided to open up just before the plastic ban. Smart thinking, right?
Yeah.
Arv, kick us off then about this job interview thing.
Yeah, so this was an article from Fast Company, and they're basically asking if what would happen if we killed the job interview. The trouble is that with interviews, they're not as useful as employers think. Organizations can still make better hiring decisions without them, and there are at least three important data points that suggest replacing interviews with other more predictive measures is the way to go. So the first one is that job interviews have limited value for predicting performance. So there's this very comprehensive scientific study by APA Psych that is based on 85 years of data that says that the predictive power of different recruitment tools suggests that the typical job interview provides very little valuable information over and above psychometric tests, which tend to be both quicker and cheaper to administer.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I still think that you can go through all that, but there's still that final touch of meeting that person.
That's the to see if they fit the company culture.
Yes, because you can also do a test sort of around culture, but it's just like, you know,
little things like personal hygiene, they smell, little things like that.
Which you can't do in a test. Go on.
I mean, let's be fair, that's important, you know.
Yeah.
It is, and very interesting that you should say that, because they say that interviews, the problem with interviews is that it is an hour where a person behaves their best.
Right.
So they put on like a show for the employer, the potential employer that they're sitting in front of. It's not exactly who the person is all the time.
Okay, so you've done all the tests and you qualify, but the final decision is still that face-to-face.
Then it's up to the employer. Then it can be face-to-face. That's when they say the face-to-face works.
Okay.
But it shouldn't work without the psychometric tests.
Okay.
That's basically their point.
Okay, I agree. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So they say that interviews are more useful when they are totally structured and standardized to the point of resembling a multiple-choice questionnaire. Yet very few real-world interviewers follow a rigorous format. Interviewers usually prefer to go with the flow, stubbornly relying on their own intuition.
Mm-hmm.
They also say that job interviews are rarely about performance. It's more about the person itself.
Agreed.
They never look at the merit of the person itself, because there's no actual way to find out what the person knows. And then the second point is that job interviews introduce toxic data. So there's a lot of information that people give out that interviewers shouldn't be looking at. So it's impossible to ignore things like gender, race, appearance, and social class. They say it's also impossible to not make biased, misguided assumptions, even though people try to. And the more people try to, the more they focus on these biases. So that's one big issue that happens. So they say that some technological solutions like AI-based tools can scrape interview footage and translate what people say into predictive performance scores. So those are quite promising. And unlike humans, computers can learn to systematically ignore candidates' ethnicity or gender while still focusing on relevant indicators of potential. So that's a solution. So that also boils back to not having actual interviews like we do today, but having like computer tests or like multiple choice or something to see the person as just a blank piece of paper that knows what him or her is good at or not good at.
Come on then, Frida. What do you think?
Okay. So I agree that there will be biases when you meet. And I feel that you still sort of need the person. But you can do all those psychometric tests and all that before. So, and it's just a confirmation of hiring the right person, because the test would be so good, right, that you can't fault anything that you say that is gender bias or age bias will be revealed in your answer.
I am a big opponent of psychometric tests. I honestly don't think that they, and I'm probably going to get killed for this, or shouted at, or at least get a few emails. I think they are something that are easily faked and easily manipulated, depending on where you want to be or how you want to be seen. And it's the same as those how to catch a psychopath kind of tests. You know, if you've ever, for fun, like some of us have done, taken these tests, you know, to find out whether or not you might be a psychopath, you know, you can manipulate these kind of things, I think. And I don't think that is a good indicator, for me anyway, you know, of what people are actually like.
Right.
And I think the whole face-to-face thing, I think, is something that you can really use to read things like, you know, micro expressions and the way in which people react to. So, and I'm sure, like Alvin's going to counteract with right now, the AI can do just the same kind of thing, you know.
But, okay, so the beyond psychometric tests, there's also aptitude and attitude.
Agreed,
and all these sort of things, all these mechanisms. So maybe not one formula, but several formulas to sort of get to the right answer. I mean, like before my previous job, I had an interview, I think it was an aptitude, I can't remember, I failed. But they still hired me anyway, and I stayed for 10 over years because they just wanted to hire me.
There you go.
It's funny you should say about the, you know, the testing to see if someone's a psychopath or like a narcissist or something. So they say that so-called dark side personality traits like narcissism and psychopathy are normally found among people with otherwise strong social skills. So at least in the short-term interactions that they have, like interviews, it makes them perfect for the situation. So it makes them perform incredibly well in interviews, even though they have these traits like narcissism, especially narcissism.
Isn't something like a radio host something fourth on the list of potential psychopaths? Seriously?
Yes, I don't know.
It's about number four or something, right?
There was a survey around that.
Yeah,
number four.
Yeah. Number four.
There you go. Okay. All of us.
I think number one was doctors and medical practitioners, which is frightening.
Yeah,
but, you know,
yeah,
I think it was about number four.
Yeah, so I don't know. It says it's interesting because it says that a lot more people are sort of opting for the merit system, giving them a test before actually meeting up with the person itself. So if the person passes the questionnaire, then they get into the interview process. And if they don't, then they don't, because they want to see, first of all, they want to see if they are good at what they say they're good at. Like, you know, they're good at performing at the job before interviewing the person itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's open up the WhatsApp line. Have we got some messages already?
Right. We do. We have one from Raphael. He says that psychometric tests must first be done on interviewee's immediate superior to assess if the superior is ready to handle a new recruit.
That's a very interesting point. Yes.
Interesting.
018-789-8899. So the idea is, what if we killed the job interview? Do we favor that idea? And if we did, Arvin's given us a couple of solutions. Which direction would we take? Would we move towards AI? Would we move towards psychometric tests before actually having a final
interview
meeting?
I'm nay.
You're nay.
I mean, you can minimize the, you know, I've heard people who've done 7-8 job interviews with you. I think that's ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
So if a lot of these things can be, you know, systemized or whatever, but you still have that one face to face.
I agree with that.
Right.
Agree with that.
What Raphael says is also interesting because he says that the interviewer should take the test first because it says that interviewers
to see who's a bigger narcissist.
Who's a bigger narcissist? Because they say that interviewers who are aware of their biases, who know that they are biased towards a certain race or gender or something, once they are aware, they actually are able to hide it more than the people who are unaware. So if you make, if you have biases that you're not aware of, then you might let it slip. But if you know that, let's say you're racist or you're looking for a certain person or you are sexist, then you will better hide it during the interview process. And you'll give other reasons to not hire a person, like, oh, you're not good at this, you don't have enough experience, blah, 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 when actually it's complete bias.
There you go. All right, again, 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp or at BFM Radio on Twitter. Thank you, Raphael, for getting the ball rolling. Do keep the messages coming in. We're going to move on to story number two, how to stay at work when you have 1,000 different interests. This sounds very familiar.
Are we going to do it now?
Frida.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because it's like, wow, this sounds like me. So this person said, you know, what do you do? You know, because you have 1,000 different interests. I mean, like, Arvin, you know, I think a lot of us.
A thousand. This one has got one interest. It's movies.
And a bit of music.
And a bit of music, yes.
And what about you? Have a lot of interest as well.
I think I'm terrible. Right? My focus is all over the place. That's the problem.
Okay, so there's this lady called Emily Wapnick, right? And she's written a book called, and she was also was featured in TEDx, How to Be Everything, A Guide for Those Who Still Don't Know What They Want to Be When They Grow Up, right? This is a terminology called multi-potentialites, or people who have a range of interests and pursuits over the course of their lives rather than one true calling. And I'm looking at myself and I'm thinking, what is my one true calling? I know it involves communication, but there's so many elements of communication that you can do, right? Dance could be a communication in a sense, right? Yeah. So she says, right, some of her strategies was suggest working for yourself or changing careers, which may be the right option at times, but may not be the case. So this author who discovered Emily said he found that there were plenty of ways to adapt them to stay happy for over 5 years at his job. So what you can do is still nurture your 1,000 interests and keep your job. Okay, so he's got, okay. All right, so one of which, this is one strategy, and I was looking at it and I said, oh, okay, I've done that, to nurture your hobbies, right? And while it can be tempting to think your job needs to incorporate all your interests, it's important to remember there's only one part of your life, right? Perhaps the easiest step forward, feeling more energized in your job, is to create space and time to explore your other passions outside of it. Can you push yourself to leave work at a reasonable hour so you have time to go to the pottery studio? There you go. Rich, I know that's...
I've always wanted to be a character in Ghost.
Right? So my favorite way to feel more engaged at work, he said, was to take random art classes, learning something new and working in a different medium, use my mind in new ways, and I was more inspired the next day. And that's something that I do. You know, like even Angie Tay, who used to be here, she created these art classes and I attended one of those art classes. I really feel invigorated. I'm not going to give up my day job, right? But that sort of got me excited, you know, energized for work the next day.
Right.
Right. But it's something new I wanted to try. And just, you know, that's one way. And it doesn't have to be a career because we're all multifaceted. You'll always be thinking, okay, I love running. I'm not going to make it a career, but I love it, you know. Second step, start a side gig, right? If you're eager for more of your interests to contribute to your livelihood, consider turning some of them into a side gig. And one of the things I think is really great at BFM is that they do encourage us to do other things, right? Mm-hmm. And I think corporations have to start remembering that their employees can't be limited to just their job. If you want them to be more talented, multifaceted, you got to encourage them to have other interests. So she says that side gigs can be available not only to make extra cash, but to scratch an itch. Right,
and engage
other passions. So in Emily's book, Wapnick's book, she agrees that having multiple jobs can be a great way to express different parts of your identity. And even with me, my full-time job, previously I was working in public relations, and my part-time job was TV and radio broadcasting, news reading, right? Mm-hmm. And that sort of led to where I am today because I had the benefit of having a corporate experience and the benefit of having, you know, a broadcasting experience.
Right.
And so you never know where this will lead you to, but you know, scratch that itch, right? And there was some side cash to it too as well, right?
Always a benefit.
There's always a benefit. Okay, the other thing was to pick up special projects, right? Is there anything you can do to make your actual job appeal to more interest, right? So she says that working in a multidisciplinary field, right, such as marketing, user experience design, or urban planning can be a powerful way for multi-potentialites to stay happy and engaged. So can you propose projects that allow you to collaborate with different teams, right? I think also in our work environment that encourages us. I know, like, for me, one of the things that we did on our fifth anniversary was to organize the climb up the Intermark Hotel,
right?
And that the purpose was to raise money for charity. We raised over 100,000. It was a short-term project. I loved organizing it, knowing that it will end in 3 months, right?
Right.
But so, and it was a break from work, but it connects back to work. So, like, I guess there's a couple of projects, you know, you love writing for commercials for the radio station. Cause, you know,
I love it.
So with all your heart.
Oh,
I know
my passion.
You know,
passion.
That's
I know
the other
you do.
Thing, yeah. Right? So, one other strategy is to shift your role. So massive career changes can be a common path for these multi-potentialites, but you don't necessarily have to trade in stability to make a switch. In fact, you may have a leg up if you switch roles within the company where you already have clout, right? And I think when you want to sort of move sideways because you'll be able to learn something else, it's not to think so much about money. mm-hmm. right? But that you'll be learning a new skill. I still love the company. I still love the culture. I still love it, but I want to do something different. And if you're, like my previous company, I was able to stay over 10 years because I had 6 roles in the 11 years that I was there mm-hmm. because I was just doing different things. Same company, love the culture, but I could try different things, right? And it wasn't always a vertical shift, but it was a horizontal shift by learning new skills along the way.
I think some great suggestions in there. Multi-potentialites.
Yeah.
Multi-potentialites.
Okay. So it's okay not to want to stay in one job or field forever. If you still feel the pull to explore some of your other interests, maybe then it's time for a career change.
I think the most important thing is when, you know, you join a company, like you said, they should allow you to do other things. Like there's still, some companies still have like an old mindset of, you know, you shouldn't be doing side gigs. You know, what are you doing? Focus on your job. But the job is just your 9-to-5. It's, you know, it's part of your day. And companies should be open to allowing employees to do, you know, more things, explore. So the next day when they come back, they're like fresher and, you know, they're more interested in doing whatever.
They've managed to wash. I mean, it's okay. Like you say, your day job is your day job. You need something else to kind of switch off from that. Mm-hmm. So that when you do come back, you're refreshed and you're feeling invigorated. And
a number of guests that we've had on our here, you know, with businesses, how it was a side thing. Mm. And then later on, it became a full-time thing. Or sometimes they have two things, you know. Mm. So, I mean, we've got friends who's full-time here and then comedians at night.
Right.
Right? But it's an outlet. It's another side of themselves. They want to express it. They can't express it in the daytime.
They couldn't, but now they can a little bit more.
I'm going to do like a shameless plug. Funny that we're talking about this because this week, my Five for Fortune is about celebrities who have unexpected business choices.
Oh!
Like Hugh Jackman owns a coffee company. So you wouldn't expect. It's like, you know, it's two different passions. Yeah, so. Yeah.
All right. Plug. Time to take a short break. We've got some music coming up in just a sec from Audio Slave with Original Fire. Don't forget, the WhatsApp line is open, 018-789-8899, or on Twitter at BFM Radio. It's about what if we killed the job interview? Should we get rid of it? Do something a bit different? Let us know at 018-789-8899. Time for some music. Audio Slave here on BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, and I'm in the studio with
Frida Liu,
Arvind Yuvaraj.
Started off the show today with a story about what if we killed the job interview. We've all got our own little opinions about this. We ask you guys to feedback. Darren left us a message on WhatsApp. Let's play it and see what Darren has to say about
Darren,
this.
Darren.
Hi guys. My name is Darren. So I feel that the interview system, the face-to-face interview systems, is still needed today. Even though we have AI, we have technology, we have online assessment, we have psychometric tools and all that, but the face-to-face picks up on the human factors like the body language, the person, the personality itself, the characters. You can't get that all accurately on a test. Yeah. However, I strongly agree that the interview method needs to change because I think the questions asked today are the same questions asked when I was like interviewing for jobs and like going job to job and all that. So it has to change, and we have to be a bit more creative in the questions we ask to get real answers from the interviewee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Darren. Very good points there. Yeah. Don't we agree?
Yeah.
What kind of new questions would you ask nowadays, though?
Okay, but before that, but I'll go back to Raphael's point about how, you know, yes, you want to pick up on the body language, but then the interviewer might have these biases and you may have a twitch.
This is true.
Right? And there's nothing wrong with you having a twitch, but... Mm. So,
but it could be a bias, right?
It could be a bias.
The question is, though, you know, he's talking about asking newer questions.
New questions.
What would you ask, though? I mean...
I don't know, but the one that I hate the most is, what would you say is your weakness?
But
you have to find a smart way to say it, like, oh, I'm way too punctual. You know, I'm like, I can't stop coming to work early, you know, that's like, I'm way too hardworking, you know, it's such a weird question to ask someone
at an
interview.
I work very long hours.
Yeah,
so
I work such long hours.
I need to have a more balanced life.
I never sleep. Okay, let's move on. Keep feeding back, though, please, folks. Again, what if we killed the job interview? Let us know what you think about that. 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. We're such liars. Yeah.
How did we hire Arvind?
Right, no, right?
I was never asked that question. Yet.
Right. So you were not?
Like, no, not yet.
What would you say is your weakness in Arvind? No, don't answer that. Don't answer that.
I'm way too hardworking.
You're way too hardworking.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't focus on anything else.
Speaking of people who are hardworking, let's talk a little bit about Oprah Winfrey. Mm-hmm. So Apple have announced a multi-year deal with Oprah Winfrey to create original programming, which is a bit of a coup in the battle for A-list talent and projects in the booming digital entertainment market. Here's a quote. Together, Winfrey and Apple will create original programs that embrace her incomparable ability to connect with audiences around the world. This is from Apple. They gave no details of the type of programming that she will create, the value of the deal, or when it might be released. She also had no comment. As we know, she's an influential movie and TV producer. She also published a magazine, is expected to appear on screen, a source familiar with the deal has said. They've not said how it plans to distribute its programming, to which it has committed an initial $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So this partnership is the biggest original content deal struck so far by Apple, as it aims to compete with Netflix and Amazon and Time Warner. Now, Netflix has said it will spend up to $8 billion on programming this year. And of course, back in May, it struck a multi-year deal with Barack and Michelle Obama to produce films, documentaries, and other content. Now, here's this question then, right? So you've got Netflix, who signed up with Barack Obama and Michelle Obama,
mm-hmm.
and former president and his first lady. Mm-hmm. And of course, you may have seen Oprah Winfrey's rousing speech backstage at the awards,
yep.
Which some people have said is a precursor to perhaps her running for
presidency
in a couple of years' time. Mm-hmm. So do we think, because Apple, in terms of streaming revenue and amount of users, pales in comparison to what Netflix does, right?
Yep.
Does she have the pulling power to pull people away from these two giants to Apple, do you think, Alf?
No.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so.
No.
Because it's so obvious why she moved from her network contract and stuff to YouTube. Because maybe she was losing popularity, or maybe she thought that the medium was old and she needed to do something new.
Yeah.
So that's why she started the O Network.
O Network,
the O Network on YouTube.
I think she probably thought the medium was old.
Okay, yeah,
anyway.
I think there's that too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that Oprah just caters to one demographic. There's a certain group of people who are Oprah fans or who like what Oprah says, and they will sort of gravitate towards
They will her follow content. Her whatever she does.
Yeah, yeah, wherever she goes and stuff. But then if you want to cater to like a mass market, you want people to subscribe to you, like what Netflix did, then you need different kinds of content. And Netflix, what they were doing is they were not focusing on like one person or one target thing. They were using algorithms, and they were using actual data that was fed into their system, and they've saw that people wanted something nostalgic. People who grew up and were able to spend on subscriptions wanted something from the 80s and the 90s, so they started making new programs that were super nostalgic, had old soundtracks, were shot like something.
Stranger Things.
Yeah, Stranger Things. Okay. And what is the other show from the 90s? Everything Sucks.
Right.
Yeah, so stuff like that. And then they would also touch on subjects that other content providers could not touch on, like 13 Reasons Why, went into the school shootings, and things about sexual assault. Stuff that you cannot do on normal cable networks, Netflix started to show. Just bringing Oprah alone would get like a certain demographic to follow her, but not everyone.
But do you think it's with Oprah, Winfrey, or Oprah and what the creative team can provide? You know, I know she's got her masterclass series that doesn't feature her.
Yeah.
It features different kinds of people, how they grew up and all that sort of thing. Well, I was watching Lenny Kravitz. But, you know, of course, you know, do you have a song? Anyway, but I'm just thinking whether it's just Oprah herself or whether she's got other ideas.
I mean, I'm sure she has. Yeah, I mean, right? she's looking at producing stuff on one thing or another. But even with that said, I mean, you know, the content that Netflix is throwing out, the original content that they're providing is really, really good. And like Arv says, you know, they've used a lot of data to kind of analyze what people want to watch. You know, stuff like Stranger Things was just so well targeted to a very specific audience, and then it spread from that to everybody almost, you know. And I there are very few people I know who, apart from you, Frieda, I think, who hasn't seen it, you know. And it just has that appeal. It has the music is easily identifiable, you know. The content is easily identifiable. They've just hit it on the head. And I don't know, like you say, other than her kind of, it's almost like a tribe who kind of follow her around. What they're going to do. I mean, but the movies that she's made, I know, have made millions.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's a very, very specific niche demographic. Right?
Yeah. I think if you want to compete, then you have to do what Disney is doing. So you counter Netflix and you touch on programs that you're not doing yet. So
right.
Netflix, yeah, they are doing stuff that's mostly for adults. So most of Netflix shows are quite controversial. Some of them are controversial. A lot of the documentaries give out data that you cannot do on normal cable networks. And most most of their shows are meant for adults. So what Disney does is they counter-program. So they are now they're making stuff to cater to pastor power. They're making sequels to Disney movies that kids would want to subscribe to. They're making Star Wars movies that are exclusive for their platform.
Right.
So you do things that Netflix doesn't have a license to do, or they don't want to touch for their platform yet.
And maybe Oprah will come to counter.
Maybe. I mean, but if you look at what they've done, you know, they've pulled across producers like Ryan Murphy, Shonda Rhimes, who's a big one for Netflix. Now, Amazon have just announced the rights to Lord of the Rings, which is going to happen very shortly. Mm-hmm. They've just signed up with Nicole Kidman's production company for movies and television. Apple, back in November, ordered two seasons of a dramatic series. This is the difference, right? With Hollywood stars Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston looking at the lives of people working on a morning television show.
Wow. Right? Okay.
See, and then, but other projects they've announced include a remake of Steven Spielberg's 1980s science fiction anthology series, Amazing Stories. Mm-hmm. Very smart, but also jumping on the back of the Stranger Things bandwagon, I think. But, you know, under this new deal, Oprah will still remain chief executive of her own cable company, OWN, which she launched back in 2011 with Discovery, of course. She's also extended her contract through to 2025. She can now appear on camera and on other platforms on a limited basis with this signing with Apple. So she's kind of limited what she can do with her own company and, you know, put a few eggs in the other basket. Right, we should take a break, shouldn't we?
We should.
Any more messages, Arvind Yuvaraj?
There's one from Sabrina, and Sabrina says that I have narcissistic traits and have survived in the medical field for 18 years.
I knew it! All right, thank you, Sabrina. Do keep them coming in. 018-789-8899 is the WhatsApp number, or on Twitter at BFM Radio. We're going to take a short break, a couple of songs back to back. The Bluebells with Young at Heart, followed by Lou Reed, The Great Defender. When we get back, how a paper straw factory is opening up in Britain before a planned UK single-use plastic ban. Great stuff. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bites on BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's almost time for our final story, but a quick reminder, we did start off the show today with what if we killed the job interview? We've been asking for your guys' feedback. Do keep the messages coming in, 018-789-8899, or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Now, we talk about how entrepreneurs and companies start up because there are pain points that need addressing and one thing or another. You may have heard that in the UK they plan to phase out single-use plastics. So some smart people have set up the first paper straw factory in the last several decades in Britain, and it plans to launch in Wales as fast food chains prepare for a planned ban on single-use plastic products throughout the UK, with some chains already preparing their own plans to phase out plastic in favour of paper. So this plan is run by a company called Transcend Packaging, not yet in operation, pending the delivery of manufacturing equipment from China. But according to the Guardian newspaper, they've already inked a deal with 1,361 McDonald's restaurants throughout the UK, as well as other restaurant groups. And I love this quote from their managing director. Here it goes. "We spotted a huge opportunity and we went for it," said Mark Varney, who's the sales and marketing director. When the BBC's Blue Planet 2 was on the TV and the government started talking about the dangers of plastic straws, we saw a niche in the market. It's great that all these businesses are phasing out plastic straws, but the problem for them was where to get paper ones from. So he said everyone is having to import them from China, and when you look at the carbon footprint of that, it kind of defeats the exercise.
True.
So the idea is to kind of get the equipment over in the UK, start producing them over in the UK, and you know, hopefully moving towards saving and cleaning up the planet a little bit. So after the deal with McDonald's was signed, it said they're understood to not yet have paper straw production capabilities. But we've just said that, you know, the guy said, we haven't got the stuff yet. We are going to do it. But the very fact that they've signed up with 1,361 McDonald's already, you know.
So,
but on a global basis, CNN noted that the recovery rate for plastic is horrible compared to other materials. On a global basis, only 14% of plastic is collected for recycling. The reuse rate is terrible compared to other materials. 58% of paper and up to 90% of iron and steel gets recycled. Research has now shown that there'll be more plastic than fish by weight in the world's oceans by 2050, which, of course, has spurred policymakers, individual companies into action. Great news.
Yeah.
I just saw this documentary yesterday on what Sweden is doing. And they only have 1% of waste. 99% of their waste gets recycled. It gets burned. But what happens with what's burned is then converted into some sort of energy. And this, they're, so it's only 1%. And it's come to the point where they import trash.
Yeah.
From other countries.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And also, it's great news.
Yeah. Great, the fact that somebody's seen it and gone, just looked at that and gone, hang on a minute, I can see something happening. Let's do something about it.
Yeah. So how fast do these straws dissolve?
Why are you asking me questions you know I don't know the answer to?
No, I was just thinking because, like, you know, like just thinking out loud, paper straws, how long do they last? Like, no one would think of a paper straw for your drinks.
Right.
Because most of the time, you know, there's a reason plastic is there. I'm not saying the plastic should be there.
We had a colleague this morning, and we were discussing this story outside of the studio, Frida. And, you know, our colleague said, why would you use paper straws? Wouldn't they just dissolve? And we kind of went... That's kind of the point of it, you know. But anyway,
there should be the tagline
after,
on the back.
After a use.
Yeah. After a use, yeah. But I mean, they do degrade quite quickly because it's not just paper. It's almost like a cardboard. So I believe it's not very long. I mean, you know how you throw a leaf on the ground, it's a couple of days before it starts rotting. And I imagine it can't be too long.
Okay.
Hopefully they won't have too many gubbins and preservatives and all that horrible kind of stuff in it.
So they saw like the whole band and went like, that's the straw that broke the camel's back.
I'm taking some music coming up right now.
Okay.
Music coming up. Arvin, I'm going to stop you with a little bit of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. It is Can't Stop here on Enterprise BizBytes. When we get back, we'll be giving you some events that we think you might want to check out over the next coming days. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes. BFM 89.9.
Build financial mountains. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. Almost time for us to wrap up. We've got some events to let you know about for this forthcoming week. We've also had a couple of messages regarding the plastic straws.
The straws, yeah. So this one comes from Gomi at Gomi Supaya. He says that metal straws, that's the way to go. Hashtag bring your own. And then there's a picture of a metal straw in a drink.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Bamboo ones.
Yeah, I used to have some metal chopsticks that I carry around with that you could take to pieces and fold together. I really like those.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Somebody stole those. Anyway, moving on to... metal straws, I think, is a great way, great idea. Okay, let's give out some events that we think folks might want to check out. Relating back...
I tell you.
Yes.
It's all planned. Apparently, on Wednesday, that's June 20th, from 10 to 1, there is a workshop, which is guided competency-based interview. And this is being conducted by Tic-Tac-Toe Consulting. It's free. It's held at their training center, which is at 338 Jalan Tun Razak. I think you go to Eventbrite to get more information.
Eventbrite for this one, yeah.
But anyway, what happens here is that recruitment selections, what they're going to help you with is overview, recruitment and selection process, learn selection methods, learn the different types of interviews and maybe different types of questions, understanding competencies, planning and preparing for an interview. No, I think that's an important skill. Conducting an interview, the structuring and the questioning, and writing an interview report.
That's a good idea.
So that's happening from 10 to 1. Go to Eventbrite to get more information.
Then next up, we have KL Code Club version 0.0.2. It's happening on Saturday, 23rd of June, from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock. It's happening at Dojo KL. So KL Code Club is for developers, programmers, software engineers, CS students, hackers, data scientists, anyone who writes code and wants to sharpen their skills. Just bring your laptop and an interesting project. So the gathering is basically to test out the latest tools, hustle on your side project. It's for sharing intel on what works and what doesn't, contributing to open source and helping newbies get started. So tickets are free and you can get them at ptix.com.
There you go. That's the events that we've got for you. But don't go anywhere, of course, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is a Breakfast Grill replay. As Malaysia undergoes its first ever government transition in history, many uncertainties still remain, of course, such as the fate of projects undertaken and policies driven by the previous regime. Renowned economist Professor Danny Kwa attempts to shed some light on Malaysia Baru and reviews the new government's fiscal and economic policies. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. He's actually joined by Lee Ka Shing, the professor of economics as well at the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy from NUS. Don't go anywhere. That's all coming up in just a few minutes. So let's take some music into the break, shall we? Let's have the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones with The Impression That I Get. And of course, we will be back same time, same place tomorrow at noon for Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury on behalf of Free Liu and Arvin Uvaraj. You're listening to BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.